Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News, and we are in-depth this hour on inspiring your child with a love of reading. Almost everything that's meaningful in my life connects back to a love of books. My relationship with my mother, who is a huge reader. The fact that my husband was reading Pat Conroy's earliest novels and mentioned the books on our second date. This dream job here at Minnesota Public Radio, of which books and authors are an essential part. Now, I hear tell that people live wonderful and fulfilling lives without being drenched in reading, but I can't imagine it. And that's why we're talking about raising kids to be devoted readers. What can you do? What can your kids do? And here's something I'd like you to think about. If you were to describe to your kids what reading can mean in their lives and what it's meant in yours, what would you say? How would you describe that? And if you have a reluctant reader, are you managing to lure them to books? But I have to say, I am most interested if you shared, you know, the way that reading sparks your imagination and how inspiring it has been in your world and in your life. If you were to share that with a young reader, what would you say about that? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, on Twitter, at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I, M-P-R. Be persistent on Twitter. I have tons of tweets. I will read as many as I can. And if you get a busy signal on the phone line, please call me back. Our guest now, Jean Lewin Yang, is a graphic novelist. His books include a series called Secret Coders. And he's with us today from San Jose, California. And Jean, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
And really a pleasure to have you. Pamela Paul is with us. She's an editor of the New York Times Book Review. She's the co-author of a Times piece that inspired this conversation called How to Raise a Reader. And she's with us today from New York. And Pamela, welcome back to the show. Good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Jean, we're going to throw around, I think, you know, we'll end up with a bunch of book titles and we're going to have some fun. I don't want to miss the meaning that reading in great books can bring into a life. And I, as someone who was a young ambassador to young readers for literature and as somebody who thinks about this, I'd love to hear you reflect on that. What would you say?
Well, reading has been huge in my life. I did not start off as a great reader. Even today, I'm not that great of a reader. I'm a very slow reader, especially when I compare myself to my peers. Mm-hmm. And when I was in early elementary school in first and second grade, our teacher divided us into two halves, right? The class would be in two halves, and I would always be in the slower half. They
wow.
never called it that. I think it was they named it after a color or something, but everybody knew. Everybody in the class knew. It wasn't until I was a little bit older that I realized it doesn't matter how fast you read. What
right.
matters is that you're actually reading and that you enjoy it, that you do it for fun.
Jean, I have to say, I'm surprised to hear you say, I'm not a great reader. And what, you're measuring that by how quickly you get through books?
Yeah, I guess so. In terms of pleasure, I think in terms of the amount of pleasure I get from reading, I am a great reader. But in terms of speed, I'm not.
Pamela, it's not about speed now, is it?
It's not. I'm a slow reader, too, so I'm glad to hear Jean say that. But I think that there's often too much focus on how to get kids to read and not enough focus on how to get kids to love to read.
Good.
Because that's really the key. It's not about making reading work or making it difficult or, you know, sort of esoteric. It's about making books a part of your life, something that you want to have in there.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly why my focus is not, you know, let's be real practical about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll get into some of the practical ideas of how to lure in a reluctant reader. But I really want to hear, and I want to hear from you, Pamela, too, on this, about the inspiration that loving books from a young age brought into your life. What would you say? Yeah.
I mean, I was an early book obsessive. I needed no encouragement. To me, books were like candy. And I grew up in a family where I did not own a lot of books. I lived around the corner from a library. So if I wanted a book, the answer was always get it from the library. But a nice thing about that is that that made books very alluring. They were just slightly out of reach, so they were something that I aspired to greatly. And I think that, you know, for certain children, books are an obvious refuge. There are certain kids who want to live inside stories. They're more comfortable inside a book than they are out there on the playground. And I was one of those kids. The question becomes, what about the other kids? How do you bring those kids into reading? And that, I think, is, you know, that can be a challenge. And it's something I think that parents aren't really told how to do.
Agreed.
You know, that sometimes they think that, well, by supporting their child's, you know, learning, what they should be doing is extending what teachers are doing in the classroom at home. And that may be true in other respects for education, but for books, it's not really that. That's not really the role of parents. The teachers are there, in the most cases, to teach the children how to read. They teach them phonics. They teach them the mechanics of decoding a book. But what the parent can do is support that, and they can support it in the easiest and, in my opinion, most fun way by reading not only with their children, reading their own books besides their children, reading, you know, creating a you know, sort of fostering an atmosphere of reading as a family activity. And there are a lot of other, you know, tips that we can go into, but that's the big idea, which is to create an environment in which books are an integral part of family life.
It sounds like in Juliet's household this is happening. She says on Twitter, read together every night, share series, discuss the plots, talk about how reading affects other aspects of daily life. I love that, right? How books are relevant to your daily life. And then she says, we all have our own libraries. To the phones, to Lisa. Yeah. In St. Paul. Lisa, I am so happy to have a children's librarian come up first on the phone lines here. Welcome.
Well, it's exciting to hear Jean Yang's voice, and it's exciting to hear Emily Paul. And I was a big reader. I was the one who fell into books early, and it was my refuge. But if we're talking about kids who choose not to read, that they read, but it's not their choice, I think it's very important to share with parents and caregivers not only to read aloud, but to give children choices, that you don't just say, oh, I love this book and you're going to love it too.
Right.
But give them a stack. Take them to the library. Support the school librarians. Support the people who are there to share those titles and those exciting things. And Jean's campaign for reading outside your comfort zone, comics are cool, and if you love comics, you can bridge into other books. And if you've never read a comic or a graphic novel, now's the day. Pick it up today.
Jean, Lisa, thank you for mentioning the reading outside your comfort zone. Jean, I think you call this reading without walls. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. I want to thank Lisa for everything she does as a librarian. I feel like librarians are the foundation of reading culture in our society. They are so important, especially in a day and age where we're inundated with information. Librarians help us sort through that information. So as National Ambassador for Young People's Literature, I'm promoting a platform, and the platform is called Reading Without Walls. So what I mean by that is I want everybody really to explore the world through books. And the way the challenge works is this. You can either do it as an individual, or you can do it as a school or library or bookstore community. You set a due date for yourself, and by that due date, you just do one of three things. Number one, you can read a book about somebody who doesn't look like you or live like you, somebody who at least on the surface seems very different from you. Or two, you can read a book about a topic that you might not know anything about, something that you might find intimidating. Or three, you can read a book in a format that you don't normally read for fun. So if normally what you read for fun are chapter books, I want you to try a graphic novel. If normally all you read are comics and graphic novels for fun, I want you to try a collection of poetry, a chapter book, even an audio book. And if you really want to go for the gold, you find one book that fits all three criteria.
I was going to say.
So I've been going around promoting this to different parts of the country, and it's been amazing to see the teachers, librarians, and bookstore owners that have come out to support it. It's been wonderful. We've even put together a website, readingwithoutwalls.com,
excellent,
where if you want to run this with the kids in your life, you can download a bunch of material.
That's really great. Rachel says on Twitter, my dad had a rule that if a movie was based off a book, we had to read the book first. Then we compared them, and we loved it. And Rachel and Egan called to say, I'm curious about the difference between girls and boys reading. My girls adopted pure love of reading. My boys won't pick up a book if their lives depended on it. Jean, back to you on that. What to lure some boys into, beyond the perhaps the comic books and the graphic novels that they're drawn to get them into some of this Reading Without Walls idea, what do you do?
Well, first, that was some of the thinking behind Reading Without Walls. We wanted to gamify reading. You know, we wanted, you know, by setting up a few criteria, we thought maybe kids who are interested in gaming, interested in points, might be interested in doing this. Some of the libraries that have implemented the Reading Without Walls have implemented it as if it were a game. So for them, what they'll do is you have to find three books, one for each of the different criteria. And after you read each of those books, after you complete each task, you get a little prize of some kind. So I was at a library recently where they would give little buttons out for each of the different challenges.
Right.
I think that's a great way of doing it. And then, as you said, like comic books and graphic novels, traditionally in America, this hasn't been true all over the world, but traditionally in America, comic books, superhero comics have been seen as a boys' medium. And while I don't think that's completely true, I do think there are ways of leveraging that and getting boys interested in other forms of reading as well.
Okay.
I think comics are great. I love comics. I make comics for a living. But I also think that if you only read comics, you're missing out on an entire category of story. So nowadays, there is a growing category of what are called hybrid books in the American book market.
Uh-huh.
These are books that use both comics and prose to tell their story, and they can serve as a great bridge between one publishing format and another.
A call here from Tricia in St. Paul. Hi, Tricia. What are you thinking about on this?
Hi. Yeah, I had two thoughts when it relates to reluctant readers.
Mm-hmm.
My first thought is just the importance of reading to your child from the parent perspective. And of course, we know that that's great for literacy and development, but also thinking about what it does as for the parent as a co-regulator for your child. And so for kids who are reluctant readers or maybe a little behind in their development where it comes to literacy, just that experience of sitting next to their parent, feeling their warmth, hearing the cadence of their voice, experiencing the rhythm of their breath, can be such a calming and nurturing experience for them. And even if the child isn't in that zone of loving of literature and reading, they are remembering that sensory experience of the warmth and tenderness and closeness with their parent that I think will carry them much further into their adulthood. And hopefully that development of love of literature will you know, catch up.
Boy, Tricia, so well said.
Oh,
yeah. Well, I don't want to miss what you've just said there. That's really well said about the sensory experience of this. Pamela, that's something that I haven't thought much about.
Yeah, and I want to elaborate also on two points. One, going back to the boys, but first to pick up on what she just said. It's not only important to read to your child. I think that people underestimate the importance of reading alongside your child, like parallel reading, just like we talk about parallel play with young children. Children need to see the adults in their life reading as well. And in most cases, that really means reading an actual book as opposed to looking at a book on a phone or on a screen, because that's very opaque. You know, the child doesn't hear, again, to get to that sensory experience. They don't see you turning the pages. They don't know if you might, you know, actually be looking at something on Instagram rather than reading a book. They need to see the grown-ups in their life are also reading. And what happens that's really wonderful is if you have a child reading next to a parent, you're each reading your own books, what will inevitably happen is the child will laugh at something or gasp and want to share what they're reading. And it leads to a conversation. Oh, what was so funny in your book? Or the child will burst in and say, I have to tell you about what I just read. So that's one part of it. The other thing I want to do is to address what I think many of us are a little bit dancing around when we talk about reluctant readers and boy readers. Mm-hmm. And that's the simple fact that many boys and girls don't read because they're too busy playing on the computer or mm-hmm. with a phone or video games, and they're distracted by a million other kinds of entertainment. And parents are, I think, rightfully in a little bit of a panic thinking, you know, how do I get my child to read again? How am I going to get them to read when there's all of this stuff out on the internet or on the Wii or whatever it might be that's so much more to, you know, quote unquote, engaging, which, again, I disagree. And so I think that there are some steps that you can take to bring kids back to reading if they've gone that route.
If you've just gotten in on the conversation here, we are talking about, yeah, one of my favorite topics, and that's the way that reading broadens your imagination and can be inspiring. And if you're a dedicated reader, I don't know, maybe you've come to books a little later in your life, how you inspire a young reader in your life to pick up everything that you love about reading as well. I mean, what do you say to kids about what reading has meant to you? And if you've got a reluctant reader in your house, maybe you're experimenting with a few things to draw them. You're hearing that from our guests today. Pamela Paul is with us. She's the editor of the New York Times Book Review. And she, along with a co-author, wrote this great piece about raising a child to be a reader. And I've been using that as a foundation for the conversation today. And Gene Luen Yang is with us. He's a graphic novelist. His books include a series called Secret Coders. And he has been involved with this campaign called readingwithoutwalls.com, if you want to look up the website. And so that's about getting in your reading life and in your kids' reading life, getting beyond your comfort zone. And Gene, I want to say one thing here, and it's never too late as an adult reader to also read beyond your comfort zone. I challenge myself on that every year. Do you?
Absolutely. I think that the challenge wasn't just for other people. It was definitely also for me. You know, I thought about the purpose that reading has served in my own life. Reading has been a way for me to explore the world. Just recently, you know, as a kid, I was terrible at sports. I hated sports. I hated any game that had a ball in it. For some reason, the ball would always find a way of hitting me in the head. But just recently, I became a basketball fan, in part because of books. I found a few different books about basketball. I read them, and I fell in love with that world, you know, and it eventually led to me now actually working on my own book about basketball. I'm currently writing and drawing a graphic novel about basketball. That never would have happened without other people's books.
I know, Gene. I mean, this is hilarious that a series of books brought you to a love of sports. You know, it's usually the opposite way around, but that's what makes you unique.
Yeah. But I think that can be true for any topic.
Right.
You know, any topic that you might find repulsive or you might find boring. It could be that you just haven't found the right book about it yet.
Yeah, that's right. So as our guests talk about this, I'd like to hear if you were to describe to your kids or a young reader in your life what reading can mean and what it's meant in yours and what it can mean in theirs, what would you say about that? 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. On Twitter, at CarrieMPR, Jeff says, we had a middle grade book club called Books and Brownies with authors and guests like Kate DiCamillo and Kelly Barnhill who would come in. Ryan says, with the three great readers, I get frustrated with endless fantasy series. What are the realistic adventure series options? We'll come back to that towards the end of the show. To Carrie here in Roseville, Minnesota. Hi, Carrie. Sounds like you teach or you train teachers on how to inspire a love of reading. Is that it?
Yeah. So I'm a literacy coach, and so I work with teachers in helping them support readers in their classroom. And then I've also worked with first graders with a program called Reading Recovery, and I've worked in several different states. And I'm just calling because it made me think about the messages that we give kids about reading. And your caller talked about he didn't think he was a good reader because he doesn't read fast enough.
That's Jane, right.
Yeah, and there's this push across, and it's for years, about across the country about fluency and getting kids to read fast. And those messages just think they hear that I should just sit down and read fast instead of hearing that you should read so it sounds like you're talking and you can use expression, but that you should also enjoy it. And so I always try to tell teachers and when I work with kids that kids really need to have choice in what they read. And I try to have kids be the ones to pick the books. And I also try to help them with the kids and with the teachers that if our brains, research shows that when we get frustrated, we shut down. So if we're having kids read things that are too tough, they won't be able to work through it. But if they read things that are too easy, they won't get better at it. So we really need to find that middle ground where they're challenged just enough to do some extra work, but where they're not frustrated. And that this is all about enjoyment.
Yeah, more independent choices, I think I'm hearing there from Carrie. And Jean and Pamela, we're getting a lot of questions on Twitter here about burnout with a genre series. And our other tweeter was asking, you know, it's too much fantasy. How do we find better adventure series? Jean, take a crack at that, and then I'll come back to Pamela on that.
Well, you know, I think it's wonderful when a kid can walk into a library and have a comfort zone within that library, you know, and it could be fantasy. I think I meet a lot of kids around the country who really love fantasy, and I don't think there's anything wrong with fantasy. I think often fantasy can serve as a way of for kids, for readers of all ages, to deal with real world tensions and real world problems in a safer way. You know, you work things out within a fantasy world, in a fantasy book, and you bring the wisdom that you learned from that book into your real world. I think that's awesome. But at the same time, I also think, just like with anything else, if you limit yourself to one kind of thing, if you limit yourself to one kind of book, you are missing out on an entire world of story. That's part of why we're hoping that teachers, librarians, and bookstore owners can use Reading Without Walls to help kids move, not even move out, but just to dip their toe out of their comfort zone every now and then.
So Pamela, that's maybe the tension here, right? Maybe you have a young reader who loves a certain genre, and maybe they read the books again and again, and maybe you don't want to disrupt that, right? You're just happy that they're reading. How do you get them to do what Jean is suggesting here?
Well, it's interesting. So I differ a little bit on this. I'm an indulgent reader. I like to indulge my children to read whatever books, wherever it takes them. And you know, kids are collectors. They become obsessive with a game, you know, whether it's a board game or a video game or with a book series, and they just want to be in that. And they want to, you know, kids are often completists. If they're reading the Animorphs series, they want to read every single one in the entire series. And so I think, you know, you let them do that. Eventually, what will happen is a curious reader will then think, okay, now what? And they'll look for the next thing. And it might be slightly different. It might be not quite as fantastical. It might be veering into science fiction, or it might be veering into a choose your own adventure format, or whatever it might be. So I don't like to guide kids too much. Mm-hmm. But what I would suggest, in order to keep them open to the realm of possibility, is to have a book-rich environment. One statistic that I think surprises people is that if you look at the factors that lead to someone becoming an avid and fluent reader, it's not actually as dependent on being read to as it is on, there's a very high correlation between real readers and the number of books that are in the home growing up. Now, that might sound like that's very expensive, but you could also just frequently go to the library and stack up on books. And it also means, you know, having books everywhere in the house, having coffee table art books out in the living room, having books piled up in the family room. You know, put books on the table in front of the television set. So if there's something the kids don't want to see on TV, they see those books there, they pick that up, whether it's during a commercial or whatever it might be. So they're constantly being exposed to other kinds of books. I mean, and I think that way the kids open the doors themselves.
You're kind of on the showing and not telling end of this, Pamela.
Just exactly.
They're ubiquitous in the household, and they seem very natural as the next thing to do. Is that what you're recommending?
Yes, and I think that it's very important for reading to be empowering for the child so that the child is making the choice about reading as opposed to feeling like it's something imposed upon them. So one of my least favorite tactics that, and you can understand where it comes from, that some parents do is like, they'll say, well, if you finish that book, then you can play on the iPad, as if reading is some sort of awful thing that you need to get
through. It's a chore or something, right.
Right, in order to get to the you know, eat your vegetables so you can have dessert, which of course, then turns reading into their mind as this kind of, you know, drudgery, as opposed to saying, you know what, one of the things that we do is your bedtime is 8 o'clock, but if you want to read in bed until 8:30, that's fine. You can stay up until 8:30 if you're reading in bed. So then reading is the reward.
Yeah.
Reading is the thing you get to do. Reading is the thing that bigger kids get to do because they get to stay up late. It's sort of taking that, you know, what the kid who is a born reader does, which is read under the blankets with a flashlight, you know, and hide it, and kind of opening that up and bringing that to kids who might not have instinctively read late into the night.
Here's a story from Amy in St. Louis Park. Amy, tell me about your kids. Tell me about your son and reading.
Okay. First of all, I just have to say I'm so enjoying the conversation today.
Good.
And I was inspired to call because my son, he's a seventh grader now, but he was a sixth grader. And, you know, I mean, every now and then he would read, but, you know, given a choice, he would do something else. And I sort of dragged him into the library because I needed to pick up some books. And there was this book for young readers that the cover of it drew his attention. And, you know, he just kind of quietly put it on my stack when we, you know, were checking the books out. And he started reading it, and he was so excited. That's all he wanted to do. And a bunch of his friends were over, and, you know, he started talking to them about it, and they were interested, and they all got the book, and they literally would lay around the house reading the book. They were so excited, and they finished it, and they all read it again. They loved it so much.
Well, and, Amy, do you remember the title of the book?
I do. I actually just pulled it out.
Okay.
It's called Tagged.
Tagged.
T-A-G-G-E-D.
Okay.
And part of it takes place in Minneapolis, so that, of course,
so that
was thrilling to them.
Amy, let me do this. I want to come to. We have so many people on the phone lines. I want to make sure I give everybody a chance, but I want to ask Jean about the power of kid to kid, right? Peer to peer reading. This is the best of all situations where a kid will be excited about this and tell his or her friends, and what happens with Amy is like the dream, right, for making your kid an inspired reader.
Yeah, absolutely. I think word of mouth works best for everything, including books, right? When you hear from a friend that you trust that something is good, you're more likely to give it a try. And I really think that that's one of the core values, one of the reasons why libraries and local independent bookstores and comic book shops are so important. Because reading is not an individual activity. Reading ought to be done in community. And those spaces within a community allow that to happen.
I am so glad you said that, Jean, because I think I have often thought of reading as a pretty solitary occupation, which is good for me. But some of the greatest pleasure is talking with other people about the books that they loved and then finding some kind of commonality around a novel that was meaningful to us and with very different life experiences. So it's great to hear you say that.
Yeah, I think that happens at every comic book convention. You know, a comic book convention is essentially a large discussion around several commonly held stories. And I think, that's sort of what drew me to that culture when I was a kid.
Sarah says on Twitter, I'm only 22, but I always tell kids that books are movies in your mind, made the way you want, with all the special effects you want for free. And Janelle in Rochester. Hey, Janelle, you have some young readers, huh?
I did. I want to say yes to kind of a lot of what everyone was saying. I grew up with not a lot of books around, but my dad read a lot. The library saved me. I wanted books to be around for our kids. And I hear people saying, especially you know, in our sports group with our boys that played sports, oh, my boys play sports, or they game, they just don't like to read. And it just wasn't an option. But we, like the person previous to me, our kids, yeah, you can go to bed at 8, but you can read for a while. I have a 20-year-old and 12-year-old boys that had stacks of books all the time. And they played their sports, and they got to do their gaming at friends' homes. But I think often the option, kids are given the option of choosing between maybe TV and media, social media, kids are, and books. And then they are choosing the social media. If they're told that it's reading time, go hang out in your room, even if they think they're not readers, eventually they get bored and they do start reading. And I would say that was true for if the books are around, like someone previous to me said, sitting on the side table.
Right.
And I had daycare for 16 years, and my parents would tell me, oh, my kids aren't readers. But they were at my house. They read all the time, and they were excited to read. And so I think it is how it's presented sometimes, and that it's not a chore, but it is a privilege, especially to have books around. And I shop at Savers all the time for books for my daycare kids, and I haven't done daycare for 4 years, and I'll still drop them off.
Oh, wow.
So it's a privilege that a lot of kids around the world don't have, is to have books readily available via a library or bookmobile or whatever it is.
Janelle, I appreciate that. Janelle, I'm sorry about this. I appreciate the call. We do have so many people that want to get in on this. So apologies to everybody if I'm cutting you off a little short here. I want to hear from a lot of people. Claire in Richfield says, I think the tactile aspect of reading is part of why libraries are so fun to explore. And on Twitter here, Ryan says, more specifically, my kids plow through lots of pages and compelling book series seem to be all one genre. Jean, some titles or maybe some series to get kids to read outside the walls of reading that they're in. What would you say?
You just mentioned Jacqueline Woodson. She's one of my favorites. I think anything with her name on it, I would recommend.
Okay.
Local Motion might be a great place to start. It's a collection. It's a collection of poetry. It's narrative poetry. I also love Matt De La Pena. I mentioned earlier that
so good.
I read a whole bunch of books about basketball, and his Ball Don't Lie was one of those books that got me into that.
All right, good. And Pamela, what would you put on my list here?
Well, I'm going to recommend some books to address the listeners who were calling in about like too much fantasy, enough fantasy. And I thought that Jean's point about the fact that fantasy serves a purpose and that you can work out real world, real life situations within a fantastical realm in a way that it feels safer. It's kind of like the way animal stories operate for younger children, where like if it's a gender neutral bunny, for example, a girl or a boy or whatever it might be, whoever you might be, you can relate to this little bunny's tale. So I want to take another way of adding that remove for older readers, which is through historical fiction or through fiction that explores kids who, this is getting back to Jean's point about reading outside walls, kids whose experiences might be very different from one's own. So there's a new book out this year called Refugee by Alan Gratz, which interweaves three stories, the story of a Jewish boy in World War II, a Cuban refugee, and a Syrian refugee, and takes three fictionalized stories and weaves them together in a way that I think really allows children to imagine lives different from their own while at the same time being able to relate to some of the stories within. Linda Sue Park is also an incredible author. She's very versatile. She's done every genre, but she's done some incredible historical fiction. Also, Ruta Sepetys for older readers. Ruta Sepetys has written several books. Two of them focus on sort of Cold War and World War II era girls, and I think are really powerful. One of those books is Between Shades of Gray.
Okay.
And then the other one is Inside Out and Back Again, which is told in verse by Tana Lai, about a Vietnamese American girl. And the last one I'm going to say, and this I think Jean will appreciate as well, this is a graphic novel memoir by Cece Bell called El Defo. And it's such a great book about a young a girl who loses her hearing and imagines herself as a kind of superhero. It's just a really powerful book that these are all stories, again, that the experiences within might not be the same as those of the person reading them, but the reader can identify with and feel compassion and understand what those characters are going with. And that kind of building empathy and allowing those leaps of imagination is one of the things that books do so well.
That is perfect. Okay, so I will, for everybody who's going, I wasn't able to jot down all that, I will tweet out the titles through the day here. To the phones to Deborah in Anoka. Hi, Deborah. What's your story with this?
Well, hi. I'm a writer and editor for a living, although sadly I've often only squeezed in the required 20 minutes, you know, quote-unquote required 20 minutes suggested by research to read to a child every night.
Uh-huh.
But we have books everywhere in our messy house, and my twin boys are now 9 years old, and their major activity is reading. Interestingly, one twin has Asperger's, and he reads very differently and more carefully than his twin,
uh-huh.
who's a fast reader who came to reading later than his brother. But this last spring, they ended up with the exact same high MCA test scores.
Wow.
So anyway, I'm essentially advocating for a messy book house here.
I think we can get behind that. Does your twin with Asperger's, are the boys reading the same thing just at different paces, or are you finding that they're developing really different interests in what they're reading?
They overlap. Like Harry Potter, the whole series, that's a commonality between them. One's almost done with the series. The other one got done last February.
Okay.
So there is overlap, but the child with Asperger's likes to read things that are more true stories based, I guess.
Deborah, good to have the call. Pamela, am I right in that I remember from the piece that you say don't push Harry Potter? Is that right?
Yeah.
Why?
I know. I've got some pretty strong opinions on Harry Potter because Harry Potter is the candy. It's the ice cream cake. You don't need to push a child to read Harry Potter. When they're ready for it, they will come to it on their own. And actually, one of the things we talk about in our guide to raising a reader is the sort of post-Harry Potter syndrome where like nothing seems as good, you know, and you have to find something amazing to pull your kid out of it. For my oldest child, that was the Oz books, the original Oz books, that whole series. But you know, kids will get to Harry Potter when they're ready. And the other thing to remember is that J.K. Rowling structured those books so that the first four were middle grade novels and the second three are YA novels. And the themes that are in them, really beginning in book four, become rather dark and challenging for a young child. So it really irks me when I hear someone showing off about their child reading Harry Potter in kindergarten like that's something to be proud of. You know, your child will get to Harry Potter when they're ready and they will be so happy. But when they're in kindergarten, there are some fantastic books for that kindergarten reader that they will then miss out on,
you know, because
they'll
over.
Have
exactly.
Right, they're skipping over and they're going to have that post Harry Potter syndrome
right.
Really early.
Jean, how do you feel about Harry Potter?
We have four kids. Our second one, my 10-year-old daughter, she's just started reading Harry Potter, and it's exactly what Pamela said. She found it when she was ready, and she really found it by word of mouth. There's a group of girls at her school who all, like, they go online and they figure out what house they belong to. They do, like, a little sorting hat app to figure out what house they belong to. They figure out what kind of wand they have. So it's an example of reading in community. She's reading these books. I think she's in the middle of the second one right now, and she's talking to her friends about it. It's really wonderful to see. I think it's great. And,
you know,
and I also have to say, if you're interested in fantasy stuff, Ben Hatke's work is wonderful. He's a graphic novelist.
Oh, he's amazing.
He does fantasy and science fiction books that could read well alongside Harry Potter or right before a kid gets
Ben
to Harry
Hatke.
Potter.
Okay. Pamela, you were going to say?
I was going to say, Jean picked up on something that brings up a theme earlier about community of readers. And this is one of the ways in which the internet has really been fantastic for kids who read and read in isolation, is that if you don't know kids at your school or in your class or have friends who are readers, you can find them online. You know, many publishers have websites for fans. There are chat rooms where you can talk about what dragon you are in this series or who your favorite character is in that, or debate plot points. You know, similarly, there are podcasts devoted to kids' books. So there's lots of ways for readers who, you know, might be in a small town somewhere, they don't know any other kids who are as big, you know, into the series they're into, they can find those kids and they can connect with them. And I think that's really powerful.
I think that's a neat idea here. In the 10 minutes that we have left of the show, I'm going to ask you, as you listen and follow our conversation here, if you've figured out a cool way to have your kids read in community, as Jean has been describing this. And we heard from a listener who said, yep, my son fell in love with a book, and then all the guys, the kids would come over, and instead of playing video games, they'd sit there and talk about the book. Have you figured out a way to do that? Maybe have an example of that. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. Molly says, I like this. This is good. She says, as a teacher, I present a genre menu to my kids, expected to taste the genres like food, and they figure out what tastes good. To Sonia in Orono. Hi, Sonia. How does this work for you?
Oh, well, I think it's partly because my husband and I are ridiculous readers, and so we've always just been excited about books the whole time we've had kids, and we've always had a lot of books around and not very much screen time. But one of the things I think that has gotten my kids excited is, you know, I talk about the reality that they can travel anywhere that they want to in the entire world, including through time, when they have a good book.
A good example. Yeah. So what's on the reading list right now, Sonia?
We love Harry Potter, and they're going back for the second time. But it's actually hard to keep my kids in books, so they go about 10 a week.
Wow.
I did want to just say that for those who are struggling to have their boys read, because I have one of each, Carl Hassan has a great four-book series that both boys and girls have loved. It's Hoot, Flush,
oh, yeah.
Roar, and Chomp.
Carl Hyacin. He's great.
Yeah, Hyacin, yeah.
Okay.
So just a thought.
Thanks for the recommendation. Katie says, foodies love food differently than eaters. Readers love books like foodies love food. Readers revere books and the spaces and the time for them. And then another listener here is recommending some other books for kids that have, maybe they're done with the genres or they want something fresh. Birch Bark House by Louise Erdrich. Anything by Louise Erdrich. Mm. Always. Watership Down by whatever that guy's name is.
Richard Adams.
And literally everything by Rick Riordan. To Pat in Minneapolis. Hi, Pat. Thanks so much for waiting. I know it's been a while. What are you thinking about?
As parent, grandparent, and now great-grandparent, I finally found a secret sauce for the young readers.
What is it?
Especially the problem readers. Offer them, shall we read this other book, or would you want to read the same book again? And the look of relief and happiness on my young reader who hates to read was a beauty to behold, because he didn't have to struggle. He knew all the words. And he said, I want to read the same book again.
Really? Huh. This is a good point, Pat. Jean, how do you feel about that? I know kids, well, they get into comfort zones and they will read a book two or three times. Is that okay?
Well, I think it's great. Again, I think it's wonderful when a kid has a comfort zone within books. I think we all need that, right? We all need a place that we can call home. But at the same time, I would hope that every now and then, it doesn't have to be all the time, every now and then they would venture outside.
Pamela, I want to mention that you and Maria, when you wrote this piece about raising a reader, you mentioned Jean's memoir, American Born Chinese, as a favorite that could be inspiring to kids to read. I didn't want to end the show without noting that.
Yes, we're big fans of Gene here. So, and he does, you know, it's terrific because it's a story about immigration. It's a story about difference. It's told in graphic novel format. It's a memoir. And I believe it was the first graphic novel to win the Newbery. So, am I right, Gene?
Gene, is that right?
Oh, it was the Prince. But thank you so much.
It was the Prince.
Really,
sorry,
the
Prince is for young adults. It's the Newbery for young adult literature.
Jean, what's the first, if you can remember this, maybe the first series or the first book that you read that showed you a very different life from the one that you wrote about in the memoir?
Reading Black Boy by Richard Wright in high school. That was the only assigned reading. You know, I always had this real problem with assigned reading. If I found a book in the library, I could get through it. If it was assigned to me, for some reason, I couldn't. But Black Boy was the only one that I finished before the due date, like well before the due date, weeks before the due date, because I found it so compelling. And that's one of those things where the character, at least on surface, seems so different from me. His life experiences the character, Richard Wright's life experiences were so different from me, but I still was able to find this common humanity that I shared with him.
I think it's funny that you just said that if the book was assigned, you struggled to finish it. But if you were driving the train and you were choosing the book, no problem. What's that say about you,
Jane? It goes along with what Pamela was talking about how choice is so important.
All right. Call here from Matt in St. Paul. Hey, Matt. Hi.
Hi, Carrie. How are you?
Doing good. I think you're calling about my idea about community around reading. Is that right?
I am. And what we've done in our family is that my daughter has a few friends, and we've basically taken those families, and we choose a date and a book, and we've essentially created a youth book club amongst our daughter's friends.
This
so the family who's hosting makes a meal, and the parents come together. We talk about the book. Sometimes we watch the movie that accompanies the book, and it's been a really great way to create community.
Okay, so how do you choose the book? Are the kids choosing it, or are the parents choosing it?
It's kind of been a good conversation between the kids and the parents. So, right now we've kind of been doing a lot of the classics, Charlotte's Web. We just finished Pippi Longstocking. And so a lot of times it's books that we are currently reading to our children. But I know that when we get together, it creates a really fun way for the families to stay connected and the children to also have something to look forward to every couple months just pick that date and get together.
This is great, Matt. Thanks so much for calling. Really appreciate it. I think that's a really good idea. I hope some parents will follow it. And to Julie in St. Paul. Hi, Julie. You've got some ideas for us. What are they?
Yes, I'm a library media specialist. If you have a teen or a tween, get them to read banned books. It's banned books.
I love this.
There's nothing better than being a rebel. Go for it.
I know. Yeah, thanks for the call. Julie, Jean, I think that is a fantastic idea. All you have to do is tell your kids they don't want you to read these books. And right? And you're diving right in.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Gene, have you ever...
I think that's great. Our local library celebrates Banned Books Week, and they have all these elaborate displays. And I think it doesn't just encourage kids to read the books themselves. It also encourages them to understand the history of books and the history of storytelling within our culture.
Why does anyone bother to ban books anymore? I mean, these books... Pamela, you have a thought on that. Go ahead.
I do want to say something. So this book is probably on a banned book list. I don't know. It came out... It was... I think it's called The 14th Goldfish by Holly Sloan. No. This was not... Sorry. It's the wrong author. It's by Kate... Name is going to come to me. But the point is that in this book, there's a character who has an older sister who is a heroin addict. Mm-hmm. And my daughter picked up this book when she was 11 years old. And this book was banned in a number of places. And the author was disinvited from speaking in libraries. And she picked it up and she came up to me and she said, "Mommy, what's this word?" And pointed to the word heroin. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that if your child is going to encounter that word heroin, where do you want them to encounter it? Do you want them to overhear it with a bunch of older kids are talking about it? Do you want them to see it on the internet? Or would you rather them read it in a book where an author has carefully put it into context, worked with an editor in a publishing house to make it age appropriate, to make it understandable? So people are afraid of dangerous ideas in books. Well, let me ask you, where would you rather them encounter that dangerous book,
idea? Because they're going to encounter the dangerous idea somewhere. Right.
Exactly. And exactly. And it should be in a book. And if you have that kind of open discussion around books with your child, then they're going to come to you and say, like, what does this mean? What's this about? And that's a conversation.